in the background. I apologize.
Love
but you mentioned
radio.
Something about. Can you still hear me, Deb?
We can hear you fine.
I'm hearing something in the background. I'm sorry. But you mentioned the police officers living in suburban areas but policing urban areas. That's a disconnect. That's a problem, okay? And the problem with that is that when you come from your suburban community and you police us in our communities, there is a disconnect and you don't know how to handle us. And the fact that we don't really have this training that we need to have when we're talking about cultural training and people and knowing the difference between different cultures and handling them accordingly, you have these people coming from these suburban areas and then they're policing us. And they don't know how to handle us. They don't know how to deal with us. They're not informative about our culture, how we are. And that's a problem. And so we don't have value to them. And it's easy for them to kill us. And any little thing that we do when they pull us over is deemed as a threat. When the reality is, if somebody pulls you over and tells you to get out of a car and they have a gun and they have handcuffs, you're going to be antsy. You might not stand in the place that they told you to stand in. Even though you know your life might depend on it, it's a situation that you are now in. And they don't give us the courtesy that they might give to a white person who might not stand in the space that they said stand in, because they don't value us and they don't see us and they don't respect us. And then the laws that we have and the Constitution, that parts of that Constitution that hasn't been amended that needs to be amended, it gives them the permission to handle us like that. So we're talking about a long line of conversations that really need to be had, but we're willing to have them as black people, but they're not willing to start them. And so that's the issue. And I can't stand here and say I know where to start, but I do know that restoring is one thing, tearing down and building back up is another thing. And so one of my questions was with regard to policing in these urban communities, I had wanted to ask Darren, what do you think about, or maybe I don't know, maybe you can enlighten me, but I feel personally that when you're policing in urban communities, there needs to be equal representation with regard to ethnicity. I think I don't believe that all white people should police black people. I think that there needs to be a black cop. I think that there needs to be a white cop. We need, for the purpose of balance with and law enforcement. So maybe you can enlighten me on that. Tell me what you think about that, or what might even be what might be an opposition to that or a counter to that.
So you raised, first of all, throughout your whole conversation, you raised some very great points. Well, certainly the laws have changed in voting. But to go to your direct question, you're absolutely correct. The police should be representative of the community in which they are charged with policing. And so you will never have a majority-minority police department policing Beverly Hills, California.
Correct.
But we're changing back to these majority white police departments across our country, and it's designed, number one, to exclude the minorities. Dallas, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, most of your North Texas police departments, Arlington, in those areas where there are large people, they now have educational requirements for police officers, meaning you cannot be a police officer in this city unless you have a minimum of 60 college credit hours, or in the case of cities like Chicago, you have to have earned a bachelor's degree. So,
wow.
Long gone is the day where some of my very relatives, they came in, they migrated to Detroit, to the north, to get opportunities and found their way as a police officer in the city for 20, 25 years, serving the community in which they live, now you're getting people who are coming out with military experience and with that comes, based upon the last 20 years of the military in this country, you're getting people who more than likely have PTSD because they've been involved in combat situations. So they want these military-trained people, and or we're going to exclude minorities by saying you got to have this educational requirement met in order to even apply.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in cities like Atlanta, if you have the education, which they say, well, you know what? Hey, we're going to pay you a little extra because you got that education. But we're making it so that the average individual who has not had access to college or could not afford college, come on this job, get trained. In addition to, we're going to provide to you the educational reimbursement program so that you can obtain the educational portions that we're talking about to move forward in this department. So that's a huge thing. Secondly, you got to be familiar with who you police. And as I was listening to Nikki, it came to mind that I hear Dr. Jeremiah Wright gave a comparison one day. He said, you don't understand what it is about the cultures. He said, I can give you an example. Look at the halftime show at University of Michigan at the Big House. And you'll hear the band come out. They'll play Flight of the Bumblebee or some operatic expression of music.
Uh-huh.
But check it out over here to the Atlanta University Center and listen to Morehouse, Clark, or Spelman, where they're going to break down in halftime. We won't move out of our seats, and we realize at that point that's the real show is beginning because our bands are going to express themselves. We are expressive through music and culture, and you'll hear Earth, Wind, and Fire. You'll hear them play a Luther Vandross ballad. What we have is a great cultural misunderstanding, and it's because there are those people who are representative of the cultures who won't come sit down at the table with us and have the conversation.
Yes.
And then we are still those worthless, no-good individuals that they just put into the cotton field and use as manual labor. Mm-hmm. And so they refuse to sit down and talk with us. And then when you have an individual who's supposed to be the leader of the free world who says the dumb, crazy, asinine, racist, bigoted things he says, he's emboldened this conduct.
Yes.
I do want to get back to you. I saw.
Do you have anything else you want to ask or share, Nikki?
No, I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. I'm hanging up now. You stay on, keep listening.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Nikki. And I apologize. I saw one, and I want to say her name was Shirley. Sheryl Anderson, Charlene.
Shirley Arrington.
Yes. And she said the partners keeping each other accountable for their actions.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that is in this eight can't wait things. Basically becoming a mandated reporter, if you will, for lack of a better observation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are there and your partner or another officer utilizes force that is excessive, you are now required to report it. And in some instances, there is this, certain problems, there's a blue wall of silence, a wall of silence, if you will, to where, you know, you don't snitch. You don't tell on the other officer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, now they'll take a retribution and not provide you need, and or you won't be given the preferential assignments because, well, they're going to snitch. So by making them accountable and holding to that level will be a great deterrent, because you would believe that a person would have a moral obligation and a moral requirement to respond and say, hey, look, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
But they
don't do it. Can I interject here for a second, Sharon?
Sure thing.
Listen, here, this is the, let me do the half and half. Okay, so, you would think that they have a moral obligation. Just as, like you said, just as a human being, if you see certain things that's going on with your partner or whatever, I think in the case that you mentioned with the two young college students,
mm-hmm.
I think that in that case, one of the officers did tell the guy to put his gun down or something. Did I see that right, or am I thinking of something else?
He may have, because I've seen so many different versions of the videos.
Yeah.
But you look at, yes, he did tell him, put your weapon down.
I think he did, yeah.
But would that happen in a lot of these instances that we've had, one of the things you look at is these were lone officers. They were by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that also, there's their word. We don't have the victim's word because they're no longer with us. But I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get, when the crux of the matter is, and Nikki talked about it, is that training in the academy.
Mm-hmm.
You can complete a police academy in most instances in under 20 weeks. And for what we're asking of them, not everybody should be a police officer. And at one point in time, I know part of the hiring process in Detroit was you had to have an assessment done by a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a psychedel or something.
Right, and they look for those red flags. But one of the main things is most police departments lack is a risk management system because, listen, if you continue to get complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint, something needs to happen. The police officer who killed Tamir Rice had been fired from a few different police departments for use of force.
Wow.
And somehow he slipped through those cracks and was hired by the Cleveland Police Division.
It's the union. It's the union. They get their jobs back.
Well, even in that case, he wasn't in the union until he got on the job. So we got to talk about hiring processes.
Oh, okay.
And, we got to talk about the hiring process. What is the 1950s Los Angeles? Their process was members of the community, it was almost like jury duty, were selected to be part of the police officer interview process. Interview candidates being to be police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And while it was a stacked deck, if you will, because who were they selecting? White male professionals to interview who William Parker wanted to have hired, which was his thing, was he hired young, white, male military veterans.
Mm-hmm.
If you were getting out of the military, you were white and you were male in the 1950s, 1960s, you went to Los Angeles because you knew you were going to get a job as a police officer.
Wow.
So, we got to talk about hiring processes. But ultimately, we as a community have to force and make some things change. And one of the things is we get all outraged at this point when we have people who lose their lives. Come the 1st of August, we'll be back to our normal lives. We won't attend the Board of Police Commissioners meetings. We won't attend our local precinct meetings and voice our concerns. We won't attend and function in neighborhood watch and block club meetings. We are all busy. We're in our own little world doing what we have to do. So let's look at what we got to do to get this better. We got to hold folks accountable, and it starts with us. What should happen, because police officers are a certified job, just like teachers and nurses, there's a licensure process in there. But what is being reported to the state if we fired Joe Smith for excessive force? Because at that point, their certification should then be reviewed. And if the certification is reviewed because there's a use of force, that sets a process in motion, this risk management process.
Oh, you know what, though? You know what? I did read something. Elizabeth, I believe it's Elizabeth Warren and Jeff somebody, one of the other senators, are trying to introduce a bill to create a national database, so to speak, of rogue cops.
And that would be helpful, but you know what? To a degree, at certain things, we got to come out with certain national standards. So that database is important. But also, too, the training is important. Every state trains their police officers differently.
Okay.
In Michigan, there's MCOLS, the Michigan Commission on Law Enforcement Standards. They set the tone and standard as to what it requires to be a police officer. Texas has TCLOS, the Texas Law Enforcement Officers Standards Group. Georgia is one of many states that participates in what's called POST, P-O-S-T, the Police Officer Standard Training Council. And so most POST states have similar standards in training. Okay. Now, at one point in time, the Atlanta Police Department had the longest and most well-trained police department in the nation. That has since changed because the requirements to get the police officers out of the street a little bit faster, so they eliminated those, we'll say, elective training things like running radar, using fingerprint equipment to take prints of crime scenes, stuff like that. They took that away. But enough emphasis needs to be placed in every city, in every state, on verbal judo, verbal de-escalation technique, even their defensive tactics training needs to be expanded astronomically, because if you're taught better to how you can to restrain someone with your hands and not have to resort to lethal force, that will save more lives. Now, is that going to be end all be all? No. Because, again, you still have to learn to have a self-control element and utilizing that training. One of the biggest things is that, you know, you would think with the evidence technology, we would have more less than lethal options available as well. So the situation Friday night in the southwest Atlanta, the gentleman was intoxicated. He'd fallen asleep in a drive-thru at Wendy's. Now, no one blew a horn, knocked on his window,
right,
any of those things. They just immediately called 911.
Right.
Police officers came. Gentleman failed a field sobriety test. He began fighting with the police. So he's fighting with two Atlanta police officers. I mean, they are fighting.
And winning.
And he would manage to get one of the police officers tasered.
Yes.
And would run away, turn back towards the police officer with the taser as if he was going to tase the police officer. Saw the police officer going to get his, was going to draw his weapon, and that's when the gentleman turned to continue to flee. So it's a lot in that situation right now that you think of, what could they have done to present that? And then you also look at, where are we at a community? What's our threshold with this? Because had they sprayed the gentleman with the pepper spray, would that have been acceptable? Had they hit him with the expandable baton and somehow it broke a bone, would that have been an acceptable piece? The police officer was trying to go to the taser and to tase the gentleman, but he was overpowered and lost control of the taser. So are we being realistic in examining everything in a non-biased manner sometimes? Look at what happened. Because it's a part of it is, had that gentleman kept going, the officer kept pursuing, the gentleman turned around to activate the taser, and instead of the prongs going to the police officer, let's say the prongs went to the elderly woman, and that woman died as a result of the electricity that went through her body, would we still be blaming them for lack of action? So there are certain elements of it. We got to really stand back sometimes and let information and processes go through. So, you know, how are certain things going to come out? And sometimes I stand back and reserve any position on things because I want to see all the information that comes out. Now, there's no way that you can convince me that George Floyd should be dead. There's no way that you can convince me Breonna Taylor should be dead. There's no way that you can should convince me that Fernando Castillo should be dead.
Right.
It's just we're too far out of control. But I go back to is white America that petrified of us as blacks ingrained shoot to kill from infancy forward? And then when you got Archie Bunker in the White House, who sends out a tweet that says when they start, if they start looting, start shooting. What do we expect? This is the leader. This is the person who should have a Justice Department to come in and investigate these things. And I don't think we're ever going to get that. And as critical as people were of the Obama administration, one thing we can say is that Loretta Lynch and Eric Holder came in and investigated these law enforcement agencies for violations of civil rights. And so that's when you had that disbanding of the Ferguson Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you had consent decrees issued and monitoring by the Department of Justice. And that's when we had reform actions take place. But at the heart of it all is we have some very cowardly individuals that are bigoted in their beliefs wearing badges. And again, it's not all of them, but it's enough to say it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way that any American citizen who is on the up and up should feel the way black people do when you see a police officer coming. There's no way that when you see a police officer driving one direction, you drive the other, you want to, man, I hope he's going about his way. Then you see them turn around, you're like, oh, then your heart's beating.
Yeah.
And you're tense because of the way that we have had the police brutalize us and murder us throughout centuries. So we have to have something to stop. We got to make sure, again, I go back to, you know, those psychological evaluations. You should be able to weed out some of these people during that process. there is a process that should be in place, again, to monitor their risks. Hey, you've had 4 excessive use complaints in a certain time period. We need to know what's going on. What is it that these police departments are going to do now? And you can look at the fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter goes into, we've allowed it to go on for so long. We've allowed these things to occur. And we've got black mayors, black police chiefs, black sheriffs, female, black law enforcement executives, you have organizations like Noble. We still, to this day, are on the losing end of this battle. Priscilla, when we come together and we hold them accountable the way they fear the most, we'll get justice. Because right now, riots and burnings and looting, we're still playing into their hand, making them richer. Because the Wendy's that was burnt down last night is covered by insurance. Get a profit from that. The people who worked there that live in that community are now out of work. So now we have more unemployed black people. But if we come together, and the reason this country feared Dr. King and Malcolm X is because of their intellectual attacks on their institutions. You know, everyone is familiar with the scene from the movie Malcolm X when the Islam was lined up outside of Harlem Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And it took nothing but hand movement to convey instructions to those people.
Discipline.
When Dr. King and Julian Bond and Ralph Abernathy and all those folks peacefully marched hand in hand, that resonated with them. But ultimately, they feared not with the Montgomery bus boycott because it hurt them economically. You have people who weren't going to work, and therefore, these stay-at-home white folks couldn't figure out how to deal with and raise and parent their own children because they depended on the black help. You had the loss of revenues from the Montgomery bus company because nobody was riding. So that's what we need to start. White folks understand. They understand economics. And so we, being the largest consumers, can do more damage to get their attention by not patronizing than we will with protesting and rioting. We can protest and hit them in their pockets. Because imagine, Jeff Bezos is on course, if he has not already, will be this year a trillionaire. And it comes from large shopping groups. Everybody I know got Amazon Prime. If they don't have it, they know somebody who gets it and they buy stuff off of Amazon. But imagine the impact we would have to get people in there if we had our own Amazon. So bring those people to the table. When they know there's an economic impact to it, to their bottom line, that will get justice, because then they're going to put the pressures on the powers that be, because they have those direct lines to the White House, the State House, and City Hall, because they're writing the $50,000, $60,000 fundraising checks to those candidates. And we've allowed it to happen. So getting in place with our economic policies, being civic activists in our government. Those things will start to make change, because when the government see that people are showing up at city council meetings and they're asking questions and they're wanting answers, that will make the change. I read someone condemned, they wanted to blame President Obama for not doing certain things. The President of the United States does not write legislation. They sign it into law. They either veto it and say no, or sign it and say yes. Our congressmen, our senators are the ones who write the laws, who get the aid packages, who get the training, who get the accountability. They create that. And even against the opposition that he faced, Barack Obama did extraordinary things as president. But we've got to look at what we can do. We've got to get out and vote. How many people who are out here rioting, looting, and protesting are going to be in line to vote? And not once, but regularly. We then have to hold those elected officials accountable. Because if they realize that their future is in jeopardy, Mike Duggan or Keisha Lance Bottom or Eric Garcetti or Bill de Blasio, no matter what city you're in, these mayors will hold their police chiefs or commissioners responsible for what goes on in those departments. You know, one of the things to me is kind of insulting. Erica Shields stepped down as chief of police, but then they immediately reported what she will go to another assignment within the administration. Don't resign in the front room and cut a deal in the back room. If you're out, you're out. Bring in an entirely new piece, new blood, new vision, new philosophies, new leadership. Entities are saying defund the police. And to clarify, when they say that, most of the entities I've seen that say defund the police are saying that they want to see the police department's budgets reallocated to a degree to other social programs.
Right.
So I know the Detroit Police Department gets about one-third of the city's budget. That's only for about 1,400 people. But let's take some money and reopen the Coleman Young Center for you to go play basketball and learn how to swim.
That's right.
And have creative and constructive activities to be in.
Yes.
Let's take more money and invest it into our communities, into the neighborhoods, to bring them up so that people have some pride within the city of Detroit. You know, as I travel everywhere across this country, one of the things I always do is I make sure I represent home. And so it's whether it's a Red Wings jersey, a Tigers hat, or something, I represent Detroit because that is my home. People, oh my God, how do y'all deal with it in Detroit? And I tell people, Detroit is not what you think. Detroit is a city of people who have come in with beautiful homes, who are dedicated to their families, and they're hardworking people. But we do have to change our landscape. We do have to invest and reach out to our young people now. These young people, we know what Nikita is. You say that, but I really want to see that. So the key is to spend money with white businesses that support black equality. I go on the internet right now, you go to any business, and everybody's got a Black Lives Matter statement, a racial equality statement, because they know where the business consumers. The statement is good, but let me see where your profits go. And I will say, with all that went on about Starbucks this week, Starbucks is one of the few corporations that puts its money where its mouth is. And it's the reason why I patronize them. So, case in point, I'll use the one at Mack and Woodward. There's a Starbucks at Mack and Woodward.
Yeah.
Starbucks' philosophy is they take 10% of the annual proceeds from every store, their profit, and they reinvest it directly into that community. And so that is why I use Starbucks. But can I get a black person to operate a Starbucks with that builds and that will patronize, that are open on time, provide quality service, and that won't rob me for the price of their product?
Mm-hmm.
Our economics, and we talked about that. We talked about affirmative action. God rest his soul, Coleman A. Young, made sure in his administration that blacks in the city of Detroit got their fair share of what was going on in the city.
Yeah.
And some people may not remember stress. And Detroit police stress killed more blacks than the medical condition stress did.
Hmm.
And Coleman ran on the platform of, if you will elect me, I will abolish stress.
Hmm.
And that was the first thing he did. Is he got rid of stress, he put a black chief police in place. The Detroit Police Department's leadership began to diversify by men and women of color. And when I say of color, I'm not just talking about black folks. I'm talking about Hispanics. I'm talking about Arab Americans who live in the city. So, you know, we got to look at that. As minorities, we are in a losing battle right now because we don't have the controls that we need. We still are the minority in this country, and black folks have become are no longer the majority minority. We lost that place.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to have that, we have to get together. And if we can come together, show up these meetings, in the polls and elect leaders that are going to give us our fair share, put in place people who are going to give us and protect our human rights, they're going to ensure that our police officers are well trained, that they're well equipped, and that they are non-biased. We have a great start ahead of us. But we can't fight within ourselves and then show up on the picket line and say that Black Lives Matter. Because Black Lives Matter isn't just with the police department. For me, Black Lives Matter. Black lives really matter to the government officials. Start fixing our schools. Start fixing our communities. There's no reason. I went to the same middle school as my uncle. I went to do a project and went to the school library and got the same book he signed out. He died before me. So,
wow. You
know, as black folk, we've got to put down our differences and determine that we need to come together in solidarity. We need to take back our communities. We need to be of people again. Because believe it or not, in the 1960s, everything that was awarded to us in the civil rights era, they knew what they were doing when they gave it to us. I was giving affirmative action, we'll give them some voting rights, and we're going to let the community self destruct. We have not, to quote the late Dr. Frederick Sampson, my pastor in Detroit, we did more for each other than we were colored.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, so we need to come forward and voice and hold these people accountable. We need to grab our young blacks disconnect with this Generation Z and the Generation Y. We have great disconnects with them. And we're going to continue to lose them until we grab a hold of them and bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
And so until we teach them the right way, we want to keep losing this battle. We want to have more television news reports of another black man, black woman killed by police. We're going to continue this same fight. So we got to come together and get organized. And this is a situation about, you know, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Their day has come and it is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is we don't succession plan.
Right.
Okay. Known as the greatest preacher in history. Preached to more people than we can count on. Set a succession plan for his son to take over his ministry. Who is our successor for Jesse? Who is our successor for Al Sharpton? Who was our successor for Dr. King? Who succeeded Brother Malcolm?
Right.
Who will speak for us beyond Farrakhan when he transitions on? These are things where we got to stop infighting and start playing. So until we do that, we won't make it. And we've got to do some checking within ourselves and stop being so emotional when we expose the wrongs we do to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Scripture says, when asked where was Abel, Cain said, am I my brother's keeper? Yes, we are.
Yeah, he sure did.
We are our brother's keeper. People went. Lost their mind when Dr. William Cosby told the pound cake story about Pookie stealing a pound cake and said, well, he's out of touch. He hasn't been down with us for years. The point of the matter is right and wrong is wrong.
Right.
So we should be teaching our young people, don't give them reasons to pull you over. Don't be riding down the street with your music blasting, cursing and profanity in it. Don't walk around with your pants hanging down at your kneecaps and these oversized shirts. You have to dress like a prospect, not like a suspect.
All right. That's good.
And so we've got some things to do internally, but we also have to hold those who are quote unquote the protectors accountable and say, what you're doing is wrong and we're not going to take it. We should be demanding police officers who utilize excessive force be terminated and prosecuted and convicted. We should be demanding that our police department, their risk, and identify who is the problem apple. Get them out. We should be demanding community policing. We should be demanding that the people who are responsible for protecting the city live in the city. We should be demanding that no force should be used that's unjustifiable. And then we should be at the point, if you can't do it, then we'll get rid of you and get somebody who can.
Right.
And that's the mindset of people. We speak with our money, and we speak with our votes. And I can guarantee you, if we do that, we will have the change that we want. We will have the reform begin that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't, and we continue with the status quo, to quote Malcolm X, it's time to stop singing, it's time to stop swinging. So go to the voting booth and swing that lever to the candidate, not that the one that says, oh, yeah, well, we're going to get, you know, I'll guarantee you police reform. I guarantee you that this will happen. Not the guarantee, show me the plan.
Yeah.
Provide me a roadmap with how you plan to get there. And so oftentimes people just think, oh, we're going to, as black people, we're just going to vote one way. That isn't true. We saw that in 2016. Because it's regardless of what you think occurred, Donald Trump was not just letting on all white folks.
No.
There's some black folks out there, and there's a lot of them that voted.
A lot of them.
And that still support him.
A lot of them. And growing.
To say that this would be the greatest black president of all time, that he would be.
Yeah, he said it.
What he's done for the blacks, his African American.
Oh, my God.
You know, we've got to come together. We've got to hold the police and politicians accountable for the things that take place in our community. We've also got to stop looking within ourselves and stop blaming everyone else for our inadequacies. And we've got to make the changes that need to take place. You know, I had a person tell me, I'm kind of scared now to call the police on my neighbors. Because I don't know how it's going to turn out.
Right.
But the relationship with the neighbors aren't there to where we can just go over and say, hey, you not turn your music down, I'm over here trying to get some sleep, where you go to work. Or do you mind not walking on my grass? Because I work hard on trying to have a good lawn. We got to come together. And we're not going to accomplish anything divided. Scripture said, you know, a house divided against itself will not stand. So we got to come together. We got to get some unison among ourselves and got to have a real ourselves as black Americans say, we got to get it together. Got to get our house right. So I think that's enough for a good Sunday afternoon.
Amen, amen, amen. Let the church say amen. Listen, you know, this was great, and I think that you hit a couple points. I wanted to share a couple things in terms of some of the things that have already happened as a result of these young folks' efforts. I believe New York, Miami, and Minnesota have already passed legislation to ban chokeholds. And it's a shame that this stuff was not on the books already. You know, in 2020, we're just now banning chokeholds, but that's the way it is. Minnesota is, Minneapolis is considering banning, disbanding their police department. Maybe they have some high rates of police violence. I couldn't get any information, any sources that I trusted anyway, to find out why they want to just go ahead and disband it. But that's what they're talking about. And then, like I said, I know that Elizabeth Warren is trying to come up with the national database of police officers who have a history or pattern of misconduct, police violence towards citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that are already happening. They are not nearly enough. Like you said, this is just a small part of a broader problem. And but those are some of the things that I've come across so far.
Absolutely. And as a beginning, you know, you can't turn the ship in a single motion. You got to eat an elephant one bite at a time. In the case of Minneapolis, they've had decades of problems with the police department. And so to see that happen, or that to be the idea, speaks volume of the weariness of that community now. You know, and I want to also remind you too that the four officers charged, not all of them were Caucasian. I think you had two Asian American officers included with that about George Floyd as well.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a change that's taking place. But definitely, it's something that we are getting some results. Especially, I received this note just a moment ago from one of them. They said, you know, if Black Lives Matter, then it's time to reform hip hop and rap.
Mm.
We can't support music artists who get rich from rapping by killing each other and calling women these relations.
Yeah.
So I think this movement, as it begins, we may see a new leader emerge or a new Black voice emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As well as attack things that have been haunting us, quote unquote, gangster rap is one of those things. Because it rolled out this dress and appearance standard that we see nowadays. So, this is the beginning of something good. It's going to take time. You know, the efforts of Dr. King and those of the 60s and the 50s and the civil rights movement did not bear fruit for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to exercise some patience, but not waive accountability and participation.
Yeah.
So, that's my final. I enjoy y'all today. Enjoy this conversation with you. You know, and just know I love you dearly. I'll make sure I speak with you when I get there. And Cheryl, you're right. We do have a lot of work to do. But we can do it.
It can be done. Yes, it can. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they said something about they were employed. The officer used to moonlight as a security guard at the same place that Floyd worked, but they worked different shifts. Like, they assumed that they were familiar with each other, but they're not sure how well they knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it may all come out when you try.
It'll come out.
So.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on and breaking this whole thing down for us at the last minute. You absolutely have to come back. Everybody is enjoying the conversation and the discussion and the insights that you're giving. You shared a lot of things. I'm definitely going to go back and take some notes and look at some of those things. We need to, like you said, we're gonna have to be in this for the long haul. This is not, how did you say, we can't turn the ship? What was that statement?
You can't turn the ship for a single motion.
Yeah. So I mean, and that's what it is, guys. You know, this is gonna be a battle. Someone said, Reverend William Barber said, we're in the midst of another Reconstruction. And behind, we know what happens every time there's a Reconstruction, there's a fight, there's a war. And so, you know, we need to be aware of that, keep ourselves educated. You know, don't forget we're still in the middle of a pandemic and the process of all of this. Get your absentee voting packet sent to you now. Get it now. especially our seniors, especially those of us who have underlying health conditions. Do not go to those polls if you don't have to, get because they're making, especially those of us who are in Michigan, they are making provisions for us to not have to subject ourselves to the coronavirus. So there's a lot of stuff going on, lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. But thank you, Darren. I appreciate you.
Anytime.
And we'll be in touch. I want you to come back.
Absolutely.
As things progress. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, God bless everyone. Thank y'all for joining us today. It was really a fantastic conversation. It's one that needs to continue. I encourage you all to take it to your home, to the places of work, to your family gatherings, because we do have some work to do.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do. Thank you so much, guys. Have a good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming. Good night. Good evening.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, it's over.